You're listening to the best of Halford and Brough. You're listening to Halford and Brough.
Back for Trocheck, back to Fox. Fox rips a shot and scores! Adam Fox in overtime!
I made a terrible mistake.
A shot back up and they score! Josh Stone's got it! First in the NHL!
It's cool. This is something that I'm excited. I mean, it's just special.
Good morning, Vancouver 601 on a Wednesday. Happy Wednesday, everybody. It is Halford, it is Brough, it is Sportsnet 650. We are coming to you live from the Kintech Studios in beautiful Fairview Slopes in Vancouver. Jason, good morning.
Good morning.
A-Dog, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Laddie, good morning to you as well.
Hello, hello.
Halford and Brough of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience a Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are in hour one of the program. Hour one is brought to you by North Star Metal Recycling. Vancouver's premier metal recycler pays the highest prices on scrap metal. North Star Metal Recycling, they recycle, you get paid. Visit them at 1170 Powell Street in Vancouver.
We are coming to you live from the Kintech studio. Kintech, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for?
Kintech. What an intro. What a show. There was a lot to get into. There was a lot that happened last night in the National Hockey League. Guest list begins at 6:30. Jeff Merrick, host of the Jeff Merrick Show and the 32 Thoughts podcast. He'll help us work through all of the stories from last night, and we'll continue that at 7:30. Dan Rosen, NHL.com senior writer, is going to join us as well. 8 o'clock, Thomas Drantz. The Drantzer, in my notes, incorrectly listed as the Dancer. Stupid autocorrect.
Yeah, you've been doing that for months now, and I just didn't have the heart to tell you.
The Dancer is going to join us at 8 from the Athletic and Canucks Talk right here on Sportsnet 650.
You will be dancing as well. It's radio, so we'll have to describe it.
We don't have a Drantz cam, or a dance cam, for that matter.
We'll not be describing Thomas Drantz dancing.
We have not one.
It's hypnotic in a way.
Look at it move. We have not one, but two giveaways. Actually, we have not one, but two contests today. Because we can't get our stuff together here at Sportsnet 650, we're giving away two things today and nothing tomorrow, as opposed to the logical way of giving something away today and tomorrow. Regardless.
See, you're the one making the big
You're really hung up on this.
Yeah, well, you know.
It really bothers you.
It's not so much the fact that we're doing it, it's that everyone's like, why change it? Anyway.
It's a good system.
Go big on one day. Why not?
Because it's very confusing. We are giving away a pair of tickets to see the Canucks and Ducks on Sunday, March 31st at Rogers Arena. That is an afternoon affair. Right down the start time. 12:30, afternoon affair. Canucks, Ducks on Sunday. We're also giving away a $100 gift card to Primetime Bridge Brewing. They're both going to be given to the best What We Learns. So hashtag WWL. Start sending them in now. Dunbar Lumber text line 650-650. If you want the Canucks tickets, put a ticket emoji into your text. If you want the $100 gift card to Primetime, put a beer emoji into your text. If you want to win them all, we're not going to give you both, but if you want to win them all, put a ticket and beer emoji in. Make the What We Learns good. Hashtag it WWL. Dunbar Lumber text line is 650-650. Working in reverse on the guest list, 8 o'clock, it's Drantz. 7:30, it's Rosen. 6:30, it's Merrick. That's what's happening on the program today. Laddie, let's tell everybody what happened.
Hey, did you guys see the game last night?
No.
What happened?
I missed all the action because I was...
We know how busy your life can be.
What happened?
Missed it.
You missed that?
What happened?
What Happened is brought to you by the BC Construction Safety Alliance, making safety simpler by giving construction companies the best in tools, resources, and safety training. Visit them online at bccsa.ca. There are a number of key NHL stories we need to get into, but this is your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. We will start with the Canucks. Even though they had a day off yesterday, they will practice today ahead of Thursday's game against Dallas. We need to have a conversation, Jason, about Lindholm.
Yeah, well, as you mentioned, the Canucks had the day off. I'm not sure what they did on their day off. I'm sure a few went shopping, spent some time with the family.
Costco?
Possibly. You mentioned Lindholm. I'll be very curious to see, first of all, if he practices today. They're going to practice out at UBC, followed by a media availability. And if he does practice or he doesn't practice, What's going on with Elias Lindholm? Because we heard from Friedge that he's going to see a specialist this week about something, but nobody has any idea what is bothering Elias Lindholm. And listen, I don't listen to the station all day, but I actually feel like, you know, for people that make a mountains out of molehills, according to a lot of people, like, are we talking enough about this? We're talking enough about the fact that the Canucks' big addition ahead of the trade deadline is having to see a specialist about something and hasn't been as effective as a lot of people had liked. And, you know, originally we thought that Lindholm might be the answer for Elias Pettersson on his line, and then he wasn't, and then it looked like, okay, fine, maybe he can be the 3C, but now we're wondering if he's going to be healthy enough to do that. And the fact that he wasn't the answer on Pettersson's line required Connor Garland to be, you know, brought up from the third line where he was doing a really good job. And, you know, like, I just feel like that this guy that the Canucks gave up a fair amount for as a rental, as a rental, is he going to be available to them? And is if he's available but not 100%, like, that's a big deal, isn't it? Like, am I taking crazy pills here?
Well, I think we maybe need to lay out exactly why it's a big deal, both for the organization and the player. So first off, with 5 goals. And 9 points in 22 games as a Vancouver Canuck, I think it's suffice to say that the returns on Elias Lindholm thus far have been underwhelming. It hasn't looked good stylistically. It hasn't looked good passing the eye test. The numbers don't really back up much. He's done some things reasonably well, but between the lack of production and the constant shuffling around the lineup, you just get the sense that it hasn't been a great fit thus far. Now, second part of this, tacking on the injury issue. We have very little to no idea what this is. I've seen it described as a nagging upper body injury, and that's about the closest that we've gotten on any specifics on it. We don't know if it could hold him out long term. We don't know if he's just getting a little R&R right now and a little bit of maintenance time because the Canucks are in a fortuitous position as it pertains to the playoffs. But there's another reason that this becomes a story. You don't know about the long-term prognosis here. So, you've acquired him. It hasn't looked good. It hasn't fit. He's now on the sidelines. You're worried about his availability and productivity moving forward. Now, there's another aspect to this beyond just the present, and that is there's a lot at stake here for the player and for the club. He has no contract beyond this season. He's playing for what will potentially be the last big payday of his career. And right now, if I was to say going inside the minds of the Canucks brass, they are probably not all that interested in entering negotiations with Lindholm's camp about an extension.
You know, I don't want to sound selfish here, but to be perfectly honest, you know, what the future holds for Lindholm long term in terms of his contract isn't my main concern.
Well, that's fine, but that's all part
of it.
But
hold on. But hold on. But hold on. I'm making a point. But is it for him? How much loyalty does he have to the Vancouver Canucks if he has a decision to make on what he needs to do?
That's an interesting angle. I'm willing to entertain it.
Yeah.
Part of it would be, I get where you're going.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there is some reclamation that he's going to need to do in order to reestablish his value, I would say.
Because, you know what I mean?
Like, I don't think he's like, you know what, guys? I think I might shut this one down and just start fresh.
But what if he sees a specialist and the specialist says, yeah, you can play through this, but it's a risk.
Yeah.
Because if I were him right now, I'd want to play, not because of necessarily like loyalty to the Vancouver Canucks, but realizing that my stock is quite low right now, and I would like to bring that stock up before July 1st, and, you know, I'd like to be part of a playoff team and, you know, do something in the playoffs. But mostly, if I'm thinking selfishly, I'm going, okay, I need to play because, you know, right now I've probably cost myself a lot of money by not signing this contract with Calgary, but what's done is done, and now I need to salvage my my share price or whatever you want to call it. It should be noted that, you know, even if Lindholm plays at the level that he's playing at right now, the Canucks could still use him. Like, he's out there on the PK winning faceoffs.
Yep.
He has had some good games as the third line center. He's still a good player. Like, you still want him in the lineup, even if he's playing like he is right now, which isn't great, but I also don't think it's awful, and there are some good things that he's doing out there.
It's just funny, though, because...
But what if the doctor tells him that whole thing about, you know, like, hey, you know, you're taking a risk by playing here, and we need to do something.
Sure. Hey, don't get me wrong. That's a totally valid thing to bring up. It's a lot of speculation on our part. I mean, he just could be like...
Of course it is.
Yeah, but, like, you know what I mean?
But like, this is what sports radio does. No, it's like, what's going on here?
We're going way far down the road here. If we deal with what we know is he was playing two games ago and then he missed last game, right? So there's obviously something wrong. It's obviously affected him. I wonder how lingering it is and how long it's been lingering for. I think the frustrating part about this trade in a vacuum, if we remove what might happen down the road, is that the Canucks, and specifically Jim Rutherford and Patrick Alvin, who orchestrated this trade, all the ideas were right. Doing the shopping early, integrating this guy into the lineup early, targeting someone that, you know, ticked a lot of boxes. It just never, the execution never happened. Like, it just never clicked. And the frustrating part on top of that is that you look at, I'd point to two teams in particular, what Colorado did and what Carolina did, also two very viable cup contenders, and how good it looked right away. Like, they got immediate returns. I mean, Colorado specifically with finding that 2C fit with Mittelstadt, and they take off. And then you look at Carolina and, like, how great the fits were with Gensel and then with Kuznetsov going in. That's got to be frustrating, where those teams didn't pay as high of a price, waited a little bit longer, and didn't get those guys into the lineup, and it seems like it's a little bit more of a seamless fit. That's frustrating too. But that's the trade deadline. Like, you make gambles on what's going to fit mid-season. You don't give guys a runway of, you know, off-season skates, training camp, preseason, all that stuff. There's a little bit of a hope and a prayer when it comes to the trade deadline.
Josh from Comox wonders, is there any chance Lindholm has been banged up since before the trade to the Canucks, or is that something that's required to be disclosed? Well, certainly if it turns out that Lindholm's got something significant here, and certainly if it affects his chances of playing for the Canucks, you know, we'll all be wondering about that. I don't know what the disclosure rules are. I would imagine he just goes through a physical with the Canucks. You know, we've heard about trades being scuttled just because, you know, he failed his physical with his new team or whatever. I would imagine that happens, but to be perfectly honest with you, that's a good question.
I mean, the guy's been a virtual Ironman the last 3 years.
Yeah,
right? that's worth mentioning. I think he's missed two games, man. That was his third in the last 3 years.
Yeah, but right. But is it possible, considering his form this season, including in Calgary, that something has been nagging at him? It's possible.
Could have been playing through it. The numbers in Calgary weren't off the charts, and we talked a lot about that.
You're putting it lightly there.
Yeah. But we often baked a variety of excuses, me particularly, into the equation. It was, well, he used to roll with Tkachuk and Gaudreau, and now those guys are gone, and now he's got Yegor Sharangovich and whomever else, who, by the way, Sharangovich has turned out to be a pretty good goal scorer this year. So maybe it wasn't necessarily Sharangovich holding him back. The other thing was, I'm not really sure how good of a team Calgary was this year, even when they had all their guys. By the way, Calgary's in a complete tailspin right now. We'll talk about potential rebuild for the Flames later on in the show. But it's an interesting conversation because Lindholm was brought aboard to be a jumping off point for this team.
Mm-hmm.
Again, you go back and you look at the blueprint of especially Rutherford deals, and it was easy to get swept up in the romance of the narrative, which is he's done this before.
Yeah.
Trader Jim, and I know Patrick Alvin's the general manager, but Trader Jim's gone out and done this before, and it's often resulted in great chemistry and a long playoff run. Where I'm hopeful it'll still happen, But right now, there's reason to be skeptical. Let's put it that way. There's reason to be skeptical.
I think this could be a big week in terms of Elias Lindholm news. And I don't know. Maybe it was all Elias Lindholm on the station yesterday. But I just feel like it's been a little bit under talked about. We'll see if Rick Tocchet today at practice makes any changes to the blue line. In Monday's loss to the Kings, Quinn Hughes was with Tyler Myers, so the pairs have been shaken up a little bit, while Hronek was with Zadorov and Cole was with Soucy. Soucy had a tough night, played just 12:14, which is pretty low ice time for him. Took the delayed penalty on the goal that eventually bounced three times in off his skates.
Didn't jump when he should have jumped.
I think he well, we don't know for sure. I think it was him who didn't come on the ice, but that only because Ian Cole did jump, and that was his partner on the night. So perhaps he's a candidate to get the load management treatment, and Juulsen could get back in there. That would give the Canucks three pairs of lefty-righty. But I doubt that happens because it's the Dallas Stars on Thursday. So I think you're probably going to go with your top six. And, you know, I'm not sure if Juulsen is part of that group. Sunday afternoon against Anaheim seems like a game for load management or resets.
It's load management night.
It's load management afternoon.
That's right. Load management day.
Against the Anaheim Ducks. As for the forwards, the Canucks' best line against the Kings was probably Lafferty between Bluger and Mikheyev. And that is great for those guys, but not great for the top six, which didn't do much at 5-on-5. It was Lafferty who scored a terrific goal for the Vancouver Canucks because he took the puck to the net. The top six didn't do much of that, although they did score at 6-on-5. But 5-on-5... weren't generating much. It's possible we could see some changes there. Mm-hmm. I doubt we'll see Phil DiGiuseppe stick on Miller's line with Besser. But unless Lindholm is back for Thursday, expect to see the same 12 forwards against the Stars because they don't really have, unless they're going to call up someone, they don't really have any viable extras to throw in there right now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's talk about what happened last night in the NHL. What would you say was the biggest game? Like, what would you lead off with? Would it be the Rangers clinching a playoff spot?
Actually, you know what? I'm going to turn it to the two wild card teams in the West going toe-to-toe in an absolutely crazy game. And the Nashville Predators, who cannot lose a hockey game right now, have not lost in regulation in 18 consecutive games, points in 18. That includes number 18 last night, Roman Josi scoring 40 seconds into overtime, capping off a crazy comeback. And the Preds just keep rolling. 5-4 over the Vegas Golden Knights at Bridgestone Arena. Here's what it sounded like when Josi scored the game winner.
Three-man weave. Josi hits the accelerator. Comes in! He scores! Yes, sir!
So, the Preds, I can't even really believe this run that they're on. This has been since mid-February that they just continue to rack up points and points and points and points. And if you look at it now, they actually have a halfway decent chance of moving into third in the Central Division. They're 4 points back of Winnipeg, who have hit the skids in a big way lately. We'll get to that game in a minute from last night. But I don't know what to make of this team. I look at them on paper, and we talked about this yesterday, and some people clap back saying, don't talk about who you want to play in the playoffs. But I said, if you could pick a team right now of the eight that are in the mix in the West, I'd probably pick Nashville as my first-round opponent. Mm-hmm. But they just don't lose games in regulation. So that feels like a dangerous team to go up against. As for Vegas, they're obviously going to make it now. I wish that they weren't. My hot take is pretty much dead in the water. It was while it lasted.
You'll get a hot take eventually. You'll hit one, and people will think you're a genius.
Yeah. The trick is to keep making them and make them in large quantities.
I mean, sure, right now you're 0-27 with your hot takes.
Not that we're keeping track.
But one of these days, it'll hit.
It's called a hot take, not a hit take. It doesn't need to hit. It just needs to be hot.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. That's all that we need to talk about.
Sometimes it's nice if it hits, though.
Like on occasion just once. Over in the East, there was another battle between two teams locked in to the wild card. And this one, the Washington Capitals just kind of defy all logic. They got a 4-3 win over Detroit.
Do they still
in
have a negative
overtime.
Goal differential?
Hugely negative. They're going to be one of, statistically, one of the worst teams to make the playoffs in recent memory if they make it. And it looks like they might Dylan Strome twice, a goal scorer, including one in overtime. Here's what that one sounded like as Washington got a huge win for their playoff chances on Tuesday night.
Closing in here, Carlson for Strome, he scores! Washington closes the homestand in style with an overtime win.
How are these guys doing it?
I have no idea.
How are they doing it?
Charlie Lindgren, Dylan Strome are maybe their two best players. They have a minus 26 goal differential. Ovechkin spent two-thirds of the season doing nothing.
He's getting in shape.
Yeah, and now they're
playing my way into shape.
And now they're going to make the playoffs. It's very bizarre. Like, if you go up and down everything that the Capitals have done this year, like, I have no idea how they've done this. They just kind of hung around, and then post-All-Star, they started winning more than they were losing. I think it speaks to how weak the bottom half of the Eastern Conference is when it comes to those playoff teams.
Well,
right?
I'm not going to count out Detroit. I might not even count out New Jersey at this point, considering
Greener's got them playing.
Yeah.
He's got them playing a little
put
bit.
Put a licking on the Leafs.
A little bit.
Yeah. But... Yeah, I don't know what the bigger story for me would be, if it would be the Washington Capitals making the playoffs or the Detroit Red Wings totally choking and falling out of a playoff spot. And then at the end of the season, you're looking at those three teams that we're all wondering, is this the year? And they all missed. Detroit, Buffalo is still bad, and Ottawa has had an absolutely disastrous season. And I think if you were to add all three of those up, it would just be like, yeah, it was a disaster for all of them, because Ottawa, just how bad they were. Buffalo just missing again, you know, like all the way back to 2011. The drought lives on. Like, my God, when are these guys ever going to get back to the playoffs? And the Red Wings just for tricking their fans.
Well, I think the biggest story would be Detroit, because they were the only team that was in a real position to make the playoffs. Like, all due respect to Buffalo and Ottawa, but they've always been on the outside looking in.
Yeah.
Detroit, up until a couple of weeks ago, looked like they were good to go.
And they might still make it. They might still make it, but...
But if they fall apart, because it's Yzerman, and he's the architect, and there's some obvious flaws on this team, and unfortunately for Alex Lyon, it's kind of in net.
I mean, look at the schedule that they've got coming up. This is the Red Wings at Carolina, at Florida, at Tampa Bay, home to the Rangers. Like, it gets easier a little bit after that. They do have one more game against the Washington Capitals at home on April 9th, so that will be a huge game because it's my birthday that day, and they'll be celebrating that. And Peter in Cloverdale has that same birthday, so there's going to be a big pregame celebration, and the hype will be off the charts.
Laddie?
The Alex Lyon shade.
Sorry.
He's league average. The fact that they all have, like, no one
sure
close
is.
To 30 goals might be part of the reason that they've been struggling, too.
He's league average, but he boosted his numbers in the first. He's not been great the second
he
half.
He hasn't, but
I think it's
they can't score. Without Larkin, they can't score.
Well, Larkin's back.
He's back now.
And Patrick Kane actually tied that game up late yesterday. I'm not putting this all on the goaltending, but he hasn't been great post-All-Star break. I think he's just tired. I think they've overplayed.
You're not wrong.
Yeah.
You're listening to the best of Halford and Brough.
So, by the way, I don't know if you realize this, but Zach Hyman was in the discourse yesterday. You know what?
I'm not familiar.
I'm going to pause. I'm not even going to engage in the discourse. If you want to go see what everyone's talking about, go on social media. But Zach Hyman, the player, scored his 51st goal of the season yesterday. In overtime, in a huge win, 4-3 over Winnipeg. Let's hear what it sounded like. Zach Hyman with the winner. Oilers win 4-3 in Winnipeg.
Here comes Zach Hyman. Nugent-Hopkins gives it to him. Hyman for the win. A back in it. He does score! Zach Hyman! The winner! 4-3! Edmonton in overtime!
So I'll engage in the discourse. Because I think it was Andrew Berkshire, right? He's a hockey writer that posted a video telling us all that he was going to bring us the real truth about the Zach Hyman story. And this wasn't apparently this inspiring story about a guy that, you know, was a late round draft pick and, you know, over the age of 30 hits the 50 goal mark for the first time in his life. We needed to learn more about that. We needed to learn that Zach Hyman grew up incredibly wealthy and that his dad owned a bunch of, you know, minor hockey teams in what we call in Canada, minor hockey teams in the greater Toronto area. And help me out here, Laddie, because I know you have more knowledge of this than I do, and gave his son and other sons all the advantages that you could imagine that a very wealthy family gets. And apparently he thought he was breaking big news that kids with wealthy parents often have advantages in life. And for some reason, he felt the need to almost sully Zach Hyman's accomplishments by pointing out the fact that, you know, again, kids with privilege often have advantages in life. And it was just like, it was such a silly and stupid way to go about making, I think, what is a valid point in that hockey is really expensive and it creates a lot of barriers to entry. And, you know, kids that do grow up with money do have an advantage, perhaps not even perhaps, but like much more of an advantage than kids in other sports, although those sports are turning into that as well with private coaching in basketball and baseball and soccer and, you know, sports that like all you need is a ball, right? Like, well, not so much
tennis
in a lot of cases. Yeah, right. Or golf or whatever, you know, like he used Zach Hyman hitting 50 goals as this jumping off point to go on this bizarre rant. And if you read about Zach Hyman or you know Zach Hyman, you know his story is so much more. Like, he's trying to paint this picture of Zach Hyman almost as like this spoiled rich kid that just got handed everything. And that just wasn't the case. You know, he went to the University of Michigan and their hockey coach there, Red Berenson, barely played him for 2 years. Because he was like, you're not good enough. You got to learn how to play hockey, you know? And what did he do? According to Red Berenson, he put his work boots on and he worked. And like, Red Berenson isn't going to give anything. Like, he's been around forever. He's like, I'm not going to, just because you're rich doesn't mean you're necessarily going to play. You think you really make it to the NHL? Out of a favor to a rich dad? Do you think you score 50 goals out of a favor to a rich dad? You can't buy that. Now, you can get lucky and play with Connor McDavid, but you have to be a pretty good player in order to play with Connor McDavid. And Zach Hyman was already a good player when he was with the Toronto Maple Leafs. Do you think the Toronto Maple Leafs cared that he was a rich kid? The Toronto Maple Leafs want to win games. And it was just such a stupid and obnoxious way to make a point about, you know, growing up with privilege. And I think we all should have that discussion because, you know, when I think about the way I grew up, I've acknowledged, like, I had advantages. I had connections that helped me out in life. And I think it's important to point that out. And it's important to you if you've had similar connections or privileges or, frankly, any privileges in life. Like, you don't have to grow up a rich kid, but let's say you've got a parent that's just really involved in your sports and really supportive of you in sports. And, you know, and well, you think about Connor Bedard's parents, like they were willing to make sacrifices for you. Well, that's a privilege. They were willing to drive you to all these tournaments and put you in this, in these specialist programs. Like, they're not loaded, but they were willing to do that. And I'm sure Connor Bedard acknowledges that. And it was just, I don't know, I saw this and I'm like, this is a guy that has got an idea in his head and that one idea has overtaken common sense.
Laddie, further context?
Yeah, well, I think with any player's path to the NHL and path to becoming a 50-goal scorer, there's nuance. There's different details that every player will be different. And with Zach Hyman, yes, you know, get it out in the forefront. He did have a lot of legs up in his younger days. And, you know, I worked for the Hamilton Red Wings, called their games where his father owned the team. Mm-hmm. I called games when Zach Hyman was there. And he was clearly on another level. Like, he was a great player to begin with. Yes, all of this stuff probably helped him at a younger age. But like Ruff said, when he got to Michigan, from that point on in my mind, he was handed nothing. He was a late-round draft pick. He was buried on a NCAA program, which is pretty storied. They're not just going to give out positions. You know, there's a few programs that are known for taking players just because of, you know, rich parent reasons. Michigan's not one of them. They're a very prestigious program. And the fact that he was able to be drafted by a team, moved to Toronto, you know, later in his career, and then signed the big deal with Edmonton, that's all through Zach Hyman's work. That has nothing to do with his father. And to bring that up in this way, I feel like it does a disservice for your original point about the barrier of entry, because it makes it something that it's not. This conversation that he's having about Zach Hyman, it's not really connected to the fact that, hey, a lot of people don't even start playing hockey because they don't have the funds or they don't have the parents behind.
Exactly.
And what we just have to call Thomas Grant's erotica. Thomas Grant's erotica.
Corsi.
Thomas Grant's erotica.
Expected goals.
Thomas Grant's erotica.
Dolls model.
Thomas Grant's erotica.
Regression.
Thomas Grant's erotica.
PDO.
Thomas Grant's erotica.
8:02 on a Wednesday. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Halford Bruff, Sportsnet 650. Halford and Bruff of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are in hour three of the program. Thomas Drance is going to join us in just a moment here to kick off hour three. Hour three is brought to you by Campbell and Pound Real Estate Appraisers. Trust the expertise of Campbell and Pound. Visit them on the internet at campbell-pound.com. Today.
We're coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for?
Kintec! Before we get to Drancer, huge apologies to the 2000s hip-hop aficionados out there who have pointed out that I incorrectly attributed Drop It Like It's Hot to Nelly and then came forth with a Hot in Here reference, which was Nelly. Drop It Like It Hot, of course, is Snoopin'. Pharrell Williams. I apologize to both artists and really to Nelly.
That's who's hurt most by
day.
This.
Yeah. Ruined my day.
No. What ruined your day was math.
Yes. Well, that ruins my day every day.
The entire break.
And motion smoothing.
Oh, God.
So
just here's, angry thinking about it.
Here's a snapshot.
Boils my blood.
Here's a snapshot of the Halford and Bruff show. During the break, I texted apologies to everyone for screwing up the song reference. Bruff yelled at A-Dog. Because A-Dog was like, what if the Canucks lose all their games and the Blues win all their games? And Greg just kind of sat there in silence.
Mm-hmm.
That is the Halford and Bruff. That's how the sausage is made here at the Halford and Bruff.
Well, what are you going to say to a comment like
Nothing
that?
Nothing of use was done at the break to set up for the final hour. He just...
Then I had to take A-Dog through the math. I was like, and I did it.
10 times 2.
I was like, how many games do the Blues have left? He's like, 10. And then, so if they win them all, they get 20 points. Now, how many points do they have? 80. What's 80 and 20? Is that 100? It's 100, right, A-Dog?
Let me check.
Now, how many points do the Canucks have? 98. So if they lose all their games, how many points would they get?
96.
What's 98 plus 0?
98 plus 0.
98.
And that's why the Canucks have yet to clinch a playoff spot.
Ah. Well done. Well done.
So you're saying if the Canucks lose every game and the Blues win every game, the Canucks could miss the playoffs. Is that what you're telling me?
Now, our next guest, our next guest usually makes the show more intelligent. At this particular juncture, he's going to make it way more intelligent. Joining us now, Thomas Drance from The Athletic here on the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. What up, Drancer?
I guess A-Dog didn't have a rich dad.
Nope. Couldn't pay for the tutor.
Yeah.
Just couldn't resist, Adrancer.
Couldn't pay for the, what is it called? Kunim?
Kumon.
Kumon? Kunim? Coupon?
Oh, we've lost them as a sponsor. Cumin is a spice, you big dumb moron.
All right.
We're not going to do. Morning. Do you want to do? I don't want to do the Hyman discourse.
No.
Let's do the Elias Lindholm discourse.
By the way, the Hyman discourse could be taken in a lot of different directions. So I'm also going to not say that anymore. Let's talk about Elias Lindholm.
What are you hearing, if anything, about Lindholm? And is this a story we should be talking about a little bit more?
You know, injuries at this time of year are extremely difficult. So talking about it more is kind of tough because, you know, it's going to be closely guarded, right? For a reason, you know, day to day, but with stuff sorted out, you've got a pending free agent. There's obviously a business element, for that player to work through, you know, avoiding like, at this time of year, everyone is, like, injured, right? Like, everyone has something that they're playing through, typically. By the time you get to the spring, we know how big a role injuries play in terms of team strength. I just think you kind of have to look at it as introducing uncertainty into sort of the profile of what the Canucks could look like. I mean, not that Lindholm's performed particularly well for the team. I mean, I even think the well, he hasn't been great offensively, but he's been great defensively thing is kind of missing it. You know, I don't know that he's been a huge defensive upgrade at third line center over even Teddy Bluger, to be totally honest with you. I don't know that he's been a huge two-way upgrade over what you'd get from Pugh Suter in a third line role. But we also know that he has the upside and the right-handed face-off winning ability and the penalty killing ability to be a significant help. I just think with so little information, and there's not much more privately that I've heard. You know, I think it's one where you just kind of have to wait and see. But it has big impacts. I mean, you think about this team against LA, and I know they were trying some things out. But you know, you're out Joshua, you're out Lindholm, and it's Phil DiGiuseppe back in the top six, right? I mean, that's the thing about depth. The Canucks have it, and yet you're still only a couple injuries away from icing a lineup configuration that's far from optimal.
Do you think, is that one of your concerns that, because it is one of mine, that the Canucks aren't built to get to the tough areas of the ice that are protected even harder during the playoffs?
I mean, I think this team scored, this team has scored goals, you know, from the blue paint all year, right? Like, I think they've scored the most in the league. It's over 100 goals that are from, like, tap-in distance over the course of the season. So, you know, this team's built, like, I'm far more worried about, you know, not to come back to any Hyman discourse, but the sort of pray and spray offense that's a little too dependent on point shots and doesn't necessarily result in a high enough volume of quality looks relative to, you know, certainly what a team like Nashville can do. And I bring up Nashville not because they're the best at it by any means. I bring it up because that's just kind of like, it feels like on paper it should be the most average playoff team, mm-hmm. right? The team that Canucks fans should be hoping to see. And yet, you know, that team generates shots at the second best rate, 5-on-5 in the league.
Yeah, tell us more about what Nashville does, because a lot of people listening will be like, yeah, well, I don't know what Nashville does. I haven't watched them all season.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't watched them closely. I'm watching them live at a bachelor party in Denver this weekend, so I'm actually looking forward to it. I hope they pick up a point, right? One more point, then that'll be a sick game with a team that has a chance to go on a 20-game point streak against the Avs. So, fingers crossed. You know, Andrew Brunette, everywhere he's gone, whether it was that Florida team that led the league in scoring, whether it was last year with the New Jersey Devils, like his teams, he knows some things offensively. he knows how to get a team to attack dynamically, and you're seeing the results, especially of late, with a Predators team that's controlling play at an elite clip over their last 25 games, and for the season is generating shots at the second highest clip in the league. You know, they've got top end skill with that Forsberg line. the Nyquist, Jason Zucker additions have given them even more attacking depth. And they just generate a ton. Like, they just generate constantly. And it's something that gives you some wiggle room. Like, last night, they get boot stomped for the first, especially 10 minutes, but really the whole first period against the Golden Knights. And yet, when you generate looks, when you generate high-quality looks the way that the Predators do, you're kind of never out of it, right? Like, it's such a sharp contrast in some ways with what we saw, you know, the Canucks do in the third period against LA on Monday night, where you get one shot in 15 minutes, trailing by two at home in the third period until you pull your goalie. You know, that's sort of one of, I think, the most valid concerns about this Canucks team at this point. I mean, they generate shots at the 26th best clip in the league. Now, they give up almost nothing.
Yeah.
This team's defense is extremely imposing. But, you know, we've seen so often this team jumps teams out the gate and then is able to kind of dictate the pace and counterpunch, and they're really good at it. But you can't depend necessarily, especially against elite defensive teams, on scoring first, right? If that's what you need to win, well, that's a binary. That's a coin flip. You know, all it's going to take is a puck bouncing off Carson Soucy's skates three times, and you're in trouble, right? And that's kind of the gap there, right? I've sort of been looking at this and thinking about this a lot, and the fact is that as good as the Canucks are 5-on-5, and as much as their game has peaked in terms of the quality of their defensive play as this season has gone on, which is, you know, a credit to Rick Tocchet, a credit to the personnel on this roster, like a credit to JT Miller becoming a boss, a two-way center, in a way that, you know, even 16 months ago, I would have said, oh boy, I don't see that as a likely outcome.
Mm-hmm.
You know, teams that generate this few shots 5-on-5 just don't tend to make it deep in the playoffs, like across the last 15 years. You know, so it's one of those things where I do think this team, like more than the go to the net thing, because I think this team can do that. I think they've got a lot of players, even guys like Elias Pettersson, who are just disciplined about being at the net front, being where the goals are scored. You know, to me, that's not what concerns me at all about this team. What concerns me far more is just, can they generate a high enough volume of looks to eliminate problems? Because if you're going to go on the sort of 2.5 month playoff run that this team aspires to and that we'd love to see for fans in this market, you're gonna have some things go badly, and you're gonna have to win some games where people leave the arena shaking their head afterwards, thinking, "How did that happen?"
We're speaking to Thomas Drantz from the Athletic Vancouver and Canucks Talk here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Drantz, what was the phrase that you used earlier about the offensive approach? Spray and pray, was that it?
Yeah.
I want to dive a little bit deeper into this, because we were talking earlier in the week about the metric that Tocchet threw out a while ago about shots missing the target, and how, I don't know if he was just off the cuff or whether he had tangible data in front of him, but he said the Canucks were among the league leaders. It's hard not to watch sometimes and say, yeah, you know, shots miss the target. I don't know if it's with greater frequency than other NHL teams, but one, have you noticed this at all? And two, if it is accurate, maybe we could dive deeper into the causes for it.
I need to do a little more work. I can tell you that 26th and shots for rate, 23rd in shot attempts rate.
Okay.
Like shot attempts for. So that is a gap, right? They are attempting more shots than they are generating. Relative to the league, I don't have that off the top of my head.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, you know, there are some players that, you know, maybe are a little bit miss prone or have been over the course of the season. I tend to think that's most likely to be random, most likely to be distribution, you know, the sort of thing that comes back to earth, regresses to the mean. But that's not, like, that's easy for someone like me to say, right? For
Tocchet,
bearing down and finishing your chances is, you know, something performance-based, something that he wants his players to focus in. So I think there's just a different, you know, again, it's one of those things where on a macro basis, I tend to think, you know, that this team's not, like, massively underrepresented in their shots because they're missing, you know, like, that's not the reason they're not generating shots in my view.
Okay.
But on a big picture, But in terms of like small picture execution, day-to-day stuff, the stuff that a coach should be concerned about, you can understand why even that gap would be frustrating or something to work on, something that he wants to drive home to his players that, you know, if we're going to be this defensive team, we're going to need to take our opportunities, and that's going to require us to make sure that we're accurate on our shots.
I do wonder if this is sort of part and parcel with the narratives of, well, it's tougher to get pucks through at this stage of the season. Maybe guys are going down to block shots in March that they wouldn't necessarily in September and October and November. Again, this is all sort of anecdotal stuff, but the Kings game, the last one, was quite illustrative of how tough it is to get shots through, especially in the third period when you're trailing a team that can pack the middle of the ice like that. I just don't know if there's an easier solution other than what Tocchet says, and it's like, bear down and make sure you hit the target.
Yeah, get zone time. I mean, that was the biggest issue.
Sure.
In that game against the Kings, like just way too much time in the neutral zone. Wait, you know, they need to find ways.
One and duns, you know, just like in and out. Yeah.
Get some heavy shifts going. I mean, you know,
that's where they miss the third line a lot.
100%, 100%, and you know, I. For the most part, this team's controlled play, but you know, you need, like, it's not as if when this team is trailing, they play differently, or when this team is leading, they play differently. Like all year long, even as their two-way game is ramped up, like since the All-Star break, right? It's just, there's not enough shots. There's not enough looks. Like it's just low volume. And what does that, that narrows, it's more about like probability and how it narrows your path, right? Like if you're generating 33 shots an hour versus 26 shots an hour, like that's seven more opportunities to get a break, right? It narrows your path in terms of what needs to go right, how efficient you need to be in converting your chances. And this team has been the most efficient we've ever seen, like the most we've ever seen since the lockout in terms of how frequently their shots have ended up in goals. And you know, my general way of looking at hockey is I can't assume that you're going to continue to face 880 goaltending. Like, especially as the quality of the defensive teams you play ramps up and the quality of the goaltenders you face ramps up, you know, that's a hard way to live. You're going to need to do it with more volume. You just are going to need to do it with more volume. And we know, like Quinn Hughes, the level that this team has. This team should have the skill level to generate shots, right? There's no reason that Nashville should be, able to generate more volume, like a higher volume of shots than the Canucks do, while still managing great defensive results, right? Like this team can do it. The talent's there. It's just, will they sort of be able to change their stripes when the leverage of the games is at its highest point? Can they eliminate some of those deficits or at least attack regularly in situations where they're trailing? And, you know, for all the good things that this team has done, I think that's, you know, the one lagging indicator that still remains at this point and kind of separates them from some of the, you know, inner circle contenders, your Colorado Edmontons that we're sizing up ahead of, you know, what promises to be one of the most exciting 4 or 5 weeks of hockey that this franchise has played in over a decade.
Is it a top six thing?
Partly, it's a whole team thing, man. Like, honestly, it's a whole team thing. But yeah, I mean, there is. You know, I'd have to look and see how the numbers have been updated over the last couple weeks. But, you know, this team, like 5-on-5, this team scored half their goals with Quinn Hughes on the ice, right? I mean, that's kind of like a classic stat that we sometimes bump into with teams like the Avalanche, right? And Nathan MacKinnon, right? And it's like, wow, this team really needs Nathan MacKinnon on the ice to score. And that's kind of why the Casey Mittelstadt edition and the way they deepened their forward group, you know, seemed so impactful when they made those changes at the deadline, because, you know, that team scored two goals without Nathan MacKinnon on the ice when they lost in seven games to the Kraken, right? Like, MacKinnon was as dominant individually as I've ever seen. And yet it didn't matter. They couldn't manufacture enough offense in the minutes where he was sitting. You know, this team over the course of the year, it's been like roughly 80 goals in Quinn Hughes's 1500 minutes and roughly 80 goals for in the 2000 minutes they played without Quinn Hughes. Like, that's a big gap. That's a level of dependency on the one sort of defensive pair that can get the puck moving dynamically through the neutral zone, that matches some of the top heavy team structures we've seen and sometimes been critical of on other teams. And I do think that's one of the fundamental dynamics here is can the Canucks get the puck moving well enough in those minutes where Hughes and Hronek, should they be playing together, isn't on the ice.
Get the puck moving, open up some shooting lanes, open up passing lanes.
Get set up.
Get set up and play some shifts with the puck down. You know, like, don't be one and done and get some pucks through and not just flinging pucks on net that get blocked or miss the net. Yeah.
That's it.
All right, Janser. That's it. That's all they got to solve. It'll be easy. All right. No problem. We figured out. First of all, you got to diagnose the problem and then you fix the problem. We fixed it. Janser.
They've fixed a lot of problems this year, but
they honestly have.
They have. But this offensive one is one to watch for, I suppose, down the stretch and into the playoffs.
Thanks, buddy. Have a great day.
See you guys. Bye.
See ya.
Thomas Drance from the Athletic Vancouver and Canucks Talk here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
You're listening to the best of Halford and Brough.